That presence of the divine is always with us, even when it feels dark. One of the things that I've learned as I've studied is that we talk about the light and the importance of the light. And it is because it's manifestation of the divine energy in a manifest embodied form. That doesn't mean the darkness is bad. We tend to think that. Remember growing up? I don't know about you guys, but there was a period where I would flip off my light and then run and leap from about 2 feet out onto my bed because I'd seen a Twilight Zone by hiding in the hall. My parents didn't want me to watch it, and it was about a little boy that had a creature under the bed. And so I thought, that's scary. And so dark was scary. And then I realized, wait a minute, one of my favorite things to do is to go outside on a really dark night and look at the stars. And if you love the stars, how can you fear the night? It's just a different expression. And so in Genesis, when it says, let there be light, it simply is, it was chanting the world into being, into manifest physicality in this realm, this multidimensional realm that we live in. Ayin is the no-thingness, that's the void. It's the cosmic womb, the cosmic tomb, the unknown. It's the energy of the west where the sun goes down. But we focus on holding and being the light because that in this realm is the conscious manifestation of the divine in a visible form. The scientists say everything is moving light, that the slower the movement, the denser the object. And so everything is living light. This is something I've talked about for years here because to me, it's such an important part of realizing why we're here. This month, our chapter is Sacred Journey. And Kenneth White is the spiritual master that we're following this month, who wrote amazing poetry. And he's the final chapter in this book that we've been studying this year, Sacred Earth, Sacred Soul. And it kind of brings it all together because it's looking for the deeper meaning in life. When you go through dark nights of the soul that we all go through, it's a dark night because in that moment, in this manifest world, we're having trouble seeing where the divine is. It's not that it isn't there. It's there in the light and the dark. But in our manifest world, in the way we live our lives and the way we grow our souls, we want to be aware of that presence. And so, having worked as a multi-handicap teacher, as a nurse in pediatric ICUs and pediatric psychiatric lockup units, in emergency rooms, as a hospital chaplain, covering the whole hospital with all the different wards, and then as a unity minister, there have been so many moments where I have been blessed to be present with and to hold people in love when they're in those dark nights of the soul. Each and every one of you I know has done the same for friends and family. And every act of love and kindness that you've done has changed the world and changed you. Because you, in walking with a friend who's ill, who's supporting someone in school that can't figure out that chemistry assignment and that's what you specialized in, It can take any number of infinite forms, but it's us being that presence, seeing it in ourselves and in one another. And I loved what David said, that when the mirror shatters, those shards still reflect the light. They still work. They're just in pieces. I've told you about two different spiritual traditions that really focus on this. One is the Jewish tradition, let there be light. It said that the divine light was so pure as it came in that as it comes into the created world through the gates of the Kabbalah, the different manifest forms of life. I had a wonderful teacher, Alice Ashcraft Nowicki, from the Brotherhood of the White Light in England, who said, taught a course on the Kabbalah, and she said, the Kabbalah is God's filing cabinet. All of creation, all the spiritual traditions fit into these different energetic gates. There's the gate of judgment. Across from it is the gate of compassion. You need both. And in the center is Tiferet, which is the heart. And one of the things of the Jewish tradition that I've always adored is that our role being present in the world is that as light came through all those branches and into this manifest world and everything we see, it broke into little shards, little pieces of light that are everywhere. And that our role in this world is to do acts of prayer and loving kindness and presence, and with every one of those little shards reunites with the divine light. And that through us, the kingdom of heaven will manifest fully as Malkuth, as our spiritual community, as humanity. We're not there yet. All you have to do is watch the news. But know that you are a channel of transformation and change for our world. Because with every act of kindness you do, every prayer, a little shard goes up and reunites with the divine light. And eventually, it'll all be completely lit with the same light of full manifestation. That's what Jesus talks about. Be in the world, but not of the world. Be present, be embodied, but do it with a spiritual awareness of why you're here, why this world is here, and what we've been sent to do, to create together, to evolve consciously. We've still got a ways to go, but we're doing that. In the Cathar tradition, the mystical tradition of the Church of Amour in the south of France in the 1200s, they also believe that every act of kindness, every prayer, every healing treatment, everything released sparks of light from within the person who offered the kindness and from within the person who received the kindness. And eventually, all of those sparks of light would unite to create a great column of light that links heaven and earth. And earth then becomes terra lucita, or terra illuminata, earth of light. And that it happens in and through and as us. In this chapter, he talks about something that I loved called the Diamond Country. He says, look for the shining that is deep in all things. He calls it the Diamond Country at the heart of life. Here's a piece of his writing. The sea shimmering, shimmering, no art can touch it. The mind can only try to become attuned to it, to become quiet, open, still, knowing itself in the diamond country, in the ultimate unlettered light. Isn't that beautiful? Seeing the light always, even when it seems you're in utter darkness, the light is always there. He called it the loveliness. I found that in the work that I've done in the course of my life, this life of service that my brother Doug called me to. And it's that even in the most tragic moment, there is love and light and presence there. This is how he describes it. The loveliness is everywhere. Even in the ugliest and most hostile environment, the loveliness is everywhere. At the turning of a corner, in the eyes and on the lips of the stranger, in the emptiest of areas where there seems no place for hope and only death invites the heart, the loveliness is there. It emerges incomprehensible, inexplicable, in its own reality. And what we must learn is how to receive it into ours, how to bring it into us. We lived for years in the Piscean age. We had the Taurus age, the Aquarius. We're now in an age of Aquarius, an age of light is what we are shifting into. My wonderful teacher that I met and got to go to several conferences with, Barbara Marks Hubbard, speaks that we're moving from Homo sapiens to Homo universalis. We're in the midst of this evolutionary change where all we're concerned about is the outer appearance of things and survival, into Homo universalis, a realization of our oneness with the divine, with one another, with our planet, with all of the creatures. And I see that evolving in our world right now. And this Homo universalis reminds us that we are all sparks of the divine. All of us that is all sacred and blessed. The original baptism in the Bible that first comes is that of the water baptism. And we're used to working with water from the previous age, where water is frozen, or it flows, or it steams. Those three forms represent the density of manifestation, like ice. Where it flows is that space between. And then steam, where it becomes invisible, is that presence of spirit. I believe that Jesus, when he was doing his teachings and his healing work, and the Buddha and Muhammad and all the spiritual masters, they got into that place where they could see the ice and see the steam, but they worked with it at a level of water, of flow, the form of water that is flow. With light, we have the light we see with our eyes, that dense physical light, and it's an amazing, wonderful gift. But we also have the light of perception. How do we perceive who we are, what we're doing, what's going on, and what somebody else is? That light of perception that blends thought and feeling. This is where judgment can come so easily. But it's also the place where you can shift and change your perceptions. Like the song, there's someone that you don't understand and you think they're different or they're bad or they're wrong. When you see and perceive them truly, they become another child of light who's doing the best they can with what they know. And you can grant them grace. And then beyond that is that spiritual sight, that are those moments of aha, where you've looked at the world this way, and then suddenly it's different. That's one of those miraculous moments where that spiritual eyesight lets you see the miraculous underpinning, interweaving of the universe in amazing ways. And so to come to that place with the second baptism, which is the baptism of fire, it's light, it's energy, and it calls us to see things as they are, also as they could be, to shift and flow within ourselves with our perceptions and letting go of the tightness of judgment. I shared that in the Kabbalah, you have judgment directly across from compassion. And you need, they're like two wings, you need both of them. If you're all compassion, you're not evaluating things and seeing how you can shift and change. Judgment is a sacred tool. Judgment lets me know, okay, this I believe, this I don't, and I'm willing to put my life on the line to stand for peace, for love, because that is where I draw that line and stand in this world. And all of us shift. I was blessed to hear Cynthia Bourgeau speak a week ago Friday up in Canada on exploring a non-dual Christianity of cosmic proportions. Big title, right up my alley. It's exactly what we've been talking about. She talks about how she sees the contemplative path as a way to cleanse the lens of perception. When you contemplate, you just center and become present and allow. And she says it's the difference. It helps you really realize by being still and quiet, you begin to realize the difference between knowledge and really tasting the depth behind the knowledge. She said it's what the Quakers call tasting the hidden life. Isn't that wonderful? Tasting the hidden life. To notice and know the difference between a theology of head and mind and a theology that has taken that and dropped it down into the heart to give it wings and love and compassion. It becomes living wisdom when it does that. Love becomes the key. And she says, we are in the process of midwifing a new way of seeing the world through the eyes of love that comes with a completely new theology. And she says, there's going to be resistance, as there always has been. She talked about Copernicus, and when he said, okay, the earth is not the center of the universe. The sun is, and we rotate around it. The church and theology went nuts because, no, the whole universe wraps around us and the concept of a Christed world. And so he became a heretic and ended up in a whole lot of trouble. Did it mean that we're the center? No, but from the perception of the time was that. And she said, what's funny and what's interesting is she heard this wonderful woman called Nancy Abrams speak, who is a quantum physicist and a Kabbalist. She says, well, I want to meet this wonderful Jewish woman. She sounds amazing. And she says, we are shifting in consciousness. And she said, what's kind of humorous to her, though, is she says, as a scientist, we are exploring farther and farther and farther and farther out into galaxies. Just in the last couple of weeks, they found some more. And the other thing that's happening is the other scientists that aren't astrophysicists, But our quantum physicists, they're going the opposite direction, smaller and smaller into quarks, and the space between the space may be more important than the quark itself, and it's smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And she said, the thing that's really funny is it's getting grander and it's getting smaller, and it's all divine. It's all light, it's all energy. And she said, and what's right in the middle of all of it? Us. She said, so maybe they were right. They just had the perspective wrong. And in a way, that's true, because each one of us has the ability to change the universe for all the other creatures near and far that share it with us, with what we do, with our kindnesses and our prayers. When we learn to take the darkness and not fear it, but see it as an opportunity to have new perception as to where the light is. I talk about everything is a gift from the divine that's in your life. Some of it just takes longer to unpack than others. But the spark is always there. It's what the universe is made of. It's what we're made of. We are literally, physically made of stardust. And at a cellular level, we go down beyond quarks, and we're all the space between the spaces as well. And that's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it? Which is why I love the wonderful passage, be in the world but not of the world. Understand and recognize the beauty and the intricacy of life, but stand where you are and be present, because that's what you've been sent to be. David mentioned our fifth rule of unity, our fifth, if anything, it's as close to a theology we have, or our five principles or five truths, and it's that you're an eternal spiritual being having an earthly experience for a divine reason. You are meant to be a light here in the world. There was a little boy who was in a cathedral over in France. And he kept looking at the stained glass windows, and he'd walk around, and someone said, what are you looking at? He said, I was looking at Mary and Jesus and the angels and all of the saints. And they said, oh, that's neat. And he said, yes, they're the people the light shines through. Wasn't that beautiful? They're the people the light shines through. You're meant to be someone the light shines through. Each of you is a stained glass window that's unique colors and shapes of those shards of light and energy and life that got scattered, and they got arranged in your form and your shape. And in this form, in this shape that we've created together, you're a unique stained glass window. Let the light shine through you, and let that colors of the dawning that were in our opening prayer be colors that shine forth in your life for you and for all you touch. Let us pray. Oh, sweet, sweet Spirit, abiding presence of the divine, let us simply remember, in you we live and move and have our being. Let us open to recognize that the darkness is nothing to fear. It's just the unknown, unformed, unshaped potential. But in the midst of that, we are called to be an embodied presence that knows and feels and sees the light, and then allows oneself to become a channel of that to others In the dark night of our souls, it is those who come and sit with us quietly as a small beacon of light that make all the difference in us personally. And as the Jewish tradition says, as it is done to one, it is done to all. So let us see the diamond country all around us. Let us be willing to be channels. Let us be the people the light shines through, like in through stained glass in the ancient cathedrals, here in our world now. And so it is, Om Amen, and blessed be.